There we are. Okay, well, hi everybody. Welcome. This is Matt Stevens in Abu Dhabi with you on another Sunday at 1300 GMT for another episode of Learning Together. And that's a website we have that looks like this. I'll put that learningtogether.pbworks.com. Okay. Put that in the web tour and in the chat. Okay, so what that is that's a we're trying to get people to teach one another and do it regularly every Sunday. And at the moment, we're also running the EVO session on multi literacies, and that's being run at Goodbye Gutenberg. I'm just putting in the web tour the announcement of this session, which really is kind of irrelevant here, because that's actually for another group that I deal with locally, the Peace Hall Arabia crowd. But anyway, the course that we're running is called Multiliteracies for Social Networking and Collaborative Learning Environments, and it's run at this URL that you see here. And we've been running this course in a number of different guises for a number of years, and it's sort of an evolved affair, and it's become a community. And lately, there have been some other models of such courses. And in the first 3 weeks of the syllabus, I'm going to put the first week here. First week is going up on the web tour. But you can see that first week in the syllabus. Just make sure that gets copied to the text chat. I'm sure there's a way to do this automatically, but I don't see how at the moment. Okay, that's the page I'm on right now. If you scroll down there, you'll see a video called What is a MOOC? Do you all see that? Okay, we have confirmation from Carol Pina in the Dominican Republic and Elizabeth Ann in Grenoble and Biz Teacher. Who's Biz Teacher, by the way? Want to introduce yourself? Okay, Stacy Lezama from Trinidad. Well, welcome. Nice to meet you. And we have Maisie from Israel and Natalia. I don't recall where you're from. And Emil Bargas. Who else is here? Can you introduce yourselves also, either by voice or writing in the text chat? Okay. Ooh, lost my connection to the microphone for a moment. Okay, well, basically, if you can see the What is a MOOC, first of all, do you know what a MOOC is? Are you familiar with that term? MOOC? Running a MOOC? Okay, well, anyway, I'll go ahead and explain in case you don't know. Are you familiar with the courses that George Siemens and Stephen Downs have been running with Dave Cormier? Dave Cormier has recorded some really neat videos about the MOOC courses. And I suppose if you're on that front page, you probably see a sort of a schematic of a MOOC course and how it's constructed. It's got a lot of elements going together. Well, Jennifer Bershaw, one of the co-moderators, has been sort of quizzing me on, challenging me, I should say, to explain this course, because we run it all the time and we expect people to intuit it. But of course, not everybody does. So I've been looking for ways to explain how the course is set up. And in looking to make these videos myself, I came across Dave Cormier's, where he explains the MOOC ideas much more cogently in a way that is very reminiscent of the Fevrier, what are they called? The Common Craft videos, where you can play that video and you can see, but basically the main points are that a MOOC is a course, it's open, it's participatory, it's distributed, and it's lifelong learning. So that's the way that I've modeled this course. It actually exactly articulates how the course is set up, and basically you can probably see a schematic here. But It is a course. We have readings and things like that. And I set it up on another model that I got in the late 80s from some reading I did for my MA dissertation. And that model was on a team of researchers called Scallon and Scallon. And they suggested that knowledge was passed through networked environments, and those were new back in the late 80s, more like a berry bush than by a conduit, because the model of learning at that time was a conduit model, and that model has persisted, you know, possibly in some of our own teaching, where basically, you know, you set up a course of a syllabus for students, and you pass them through the syllabus step by step. And in a way, we're kind of doing that in the Goodbye Gutenberg syllabus. But a different idea, I'm not sure, it might be better or not better in certain situations, but a different idea is to set up readings and knowledge nodes, I suppose, in the pattern of a berry bush. And a berry bush is a lot different from a conduit. A berry bush is what you approach when you want a morsel. You take it from the berry bush. And of course, you can't take them all. There are thorns there. So you just take the ones that are most appealing to you. You might work a little harder for the bigger ones, so the more juicy ones, but basically all the things that you need are arrayed as in a berry bush. So that's kind of the way I've tried to construct this course. I tried to give the impression, because it's set up in a wiki and it's week one, week two, it kind of looks like a conduit, but as you look at it, well, if you approached it as a conduit, you think, okay, I've got to do this and then do that. Okay, there's 30 things on this one page, you know, how am I going to do that in 1 week? Well, that's not the idea. The idea is that you treat it as a berry bush. You take something here, something there, and write about it if you wish, blog about it. And people are, I think the ones who are interacting in this course kind of do that. What do you think about that approach? Any comments? Okay, Natalia's mic was working there. It was working earlier, so I'm sure it will be working. We'll give you another chance in a moment. So let's see. Stacy says that this gives you the freedom to experience learning at your own pace. You build the course. Which you do you mean? Do you mean me or you? At your own pace, you build the course. You create your own course, basically. And the second point here is that it's open. By open, it means that there's nothing that's not accessible. Everything is openly accessible on the internet. The messages we post in the Yahoo group are all open. All the syllabuses we have and the names, everything is open. Everything can be looked at. There's nothing blocked. We moderate membership sometimes, just to prevent spammers. Get kind of inconvenient at times. Anyway, it's run in an open fashion, in the way that MIT, for example, puts its courses on. You can see all the courses if you want. You can read the materials. They're available. They have been available for quite a long time online. But of course, they're kind of meaningless in a way. It's kind of like reading a book. I mean, it's something you might do as you're on your way to bed or in other places. But to really engage in a course means that you interact with other people. Possibly you do the third thing, the participatory part. There's something called participatory culture. One of the readings that we've put in the Berry Bush Books section of the PB Works Goodbye Gutenberg has some free ebooks, and one of those ebooks is called Media Active by Dan Gilmore, and he talks there about participatory culture. And in a way, for some of us, we might think he's kind of speaking to the converted, but basically he's talking about how we can't be consumers of media, we have to be creators of content. And participatory means that we engage, as we're doing now, through Illuminate in this case, and through our blogs, and through comments on each of those blogs, but as in the Ning, for example, actually putting up blog posts, or you could say even posting to Yahoo groups. Yahoo groups are, each message has its URL. Each message could appear online, could be referred to later by somebody or linked to. So any questions about how we're doing things or comments so far? Sorry, once I leave one window, I have trouble finding it again. Click on another and you know how it goes. Does anybody have any questions, or are you finding any difficulty with engaging in the material? Is there something you'd like to know, or is there something that's preventing you from fully participating, or an improvement you can think to make, or some way we can clarify it?
Elizabeth Ann, I would like to say that I had great difficulty, hi Michael, I had great difficulty participating for many years because it was difficult for me to, it sounds very silly, to believe all these people were kind of ordinary people like me or real people like me or something like that. And I'm afraid that this only changed when I actually met some people with whom I had communicated on the net. When I met them in real life, it kind of cleared up this problem for me. So, in fact, my question is that just me? It's, you know, probably part of the paranormal things.
Yeah, our online communities go way back. I started Webheads. With Webheads, I should say, or Michael Coughlin has just joined us, and I and Maggie Doty sort of got together on a class online where we were working in the palace and we were meeting students and teaching English through engaging the students in online spaces. So I don't think we were really teaching. We didn't actually have a program. We just met students online. And one of the students we met, her name was Sue. And Sue was in Japan, and I think she was originally Chinese or Korean, I can't remember. I think she was Chinese. And she was living in Japan, and she was studying to be a naval architect. And she wanted to go to Texas A&M. So she asked Webheads to help her sort of validate who she was. And we did that, and actually she got her entry into Texas A&M, and while we were there, she wanted to have her mother come over, and her mother needed some documents. Hi there, CLM. Who are you? Okay. Anyway, she wanted to get her mother over, so I helped her to prepare documents for the embassy in Japan so her mother could be let into the country. CLM, you're more than welcome to put on your webcam. I might put on mine in a moment. But anyway, so when she was in Texas A&M and I went to Houston to see my parents, she came down. She made the trip and she met my parents, and she told me that she didn't, you know, her friends had told her, what are you doing with these online people? You know, it's not real. But of course it's real. It's very real. And lately, we've been meeting people we were in Brazil and Argentina last summer, Michael Coughlin and I. Michael and I participated in something called Future of Learning in a Network World, where, Michael has been to Abu Dhabi to do a presentation with Buthena, one of our group. It was called Global Learn Day, something that John Hibbs used to do every year, an online conference for 24 hours. You would think it's all virtual, except that Michael happened to be in the area and just flew in, and Bhuthena heard that the two of us would be here, and she was in Kuwait, so she flew down. So we had the three of us put on, you know, face-to-face, this on participate in an online conference from a stage at the Petroleum Institute. And on another occasion, Michael and I met in Bangkok as part of the Future of Learning and Network World, and then more recently we just went to Brazil, and again we met up there. So, you know, this is all very real. And if you listen to Michael's podcast, let's say, he produces quite a few. He's doing e-learning in Australia, and you get to meet his community over there. And they do some regular podcast events, and so, you know, you start to feel like you know his colleagues as well. So that's actually one of the later points that Dave Cormier makes in his series of MOOC videos. I've got a slide up that's just about the first one, and that link at the bottom there is the one that's in the web tour right now. And if we look at the second one, we see a little bit about how to participate in a MOOC. So I'm going to pop over to the second one. Let me see if I can do it by, let's see if I click over here. Well, while I'm talking to myself and changing screens, let me give everyone the opportunity. Maybe, Michael, you could say a word about who you are and what your interest is in multiliteracies.
Okay, yeah, Elizabeth, that was a really interesting comment. And hi, everybody. It's Michael here in Adelaide, Australia. It's around midnight here. I thought I'd just check in for the last part of this session. And I wrote in the text chat that there is a leap of faith involved initially when you haven't met these people. Now, Vance has just talked about a number of occasions when he and I have met each other and a lot of web heads. So it has become even more real, and that's a wonderfully exciting thing that happens in this world of internet, where you first of all establish your connections online, and then when you meet face to face, it's just an absolute blast. But I've been in a couple of occasions where people who I have communicated with online, I won't go into the detail, Elizabeth, but there was definitely something which told me that they weren't quite convinced that I was who I said I was online, and they needed a face-to-face meeting or a phone call. They needed some non-internet contact with me before they would totally and officially, if you like, accept me as the person that I was portraying myself to be online. So you're not alone in that feeling of doubting whether or not these people are all real, but look, let me tell you that in my experience, certainly working with the educational community online, that 99% of the people that you will meet in educational circles online are absolutely who they say they are, and are people of integrity and people you can certainly trust and learn from. Back to you, Vance, or whoever.
Okay, well, speaking of that event in Brazil, looks like we've got Claudio here in the chat. He just put his video up a moment ago. Claudio, you're more than welcome to. Do you have a microphone there as well, Claudio? Anyway, you're more than welcome to display your video. Let's see, I could possibly... Oh, no, sorry, I just turned it off. There we go. Okay, stick up mine here. If it will go. Oh, I'm at school. I don't think I can, actually. I think they block it here. I'm not sure. Yes, no, here it is. I think, yeah, I can do this. Okay, so anyway, I'm putting up my video as well. I think I'm transmitting it. Maybe not. Maybe I'm not transmitting. I don't think so. Did you see anything? You saw me. No, I'm not sure. Oh, there's Claudio anyway. Okay, we'll let Claudio on. Okay, well, Claudio says that he met me and B, Barbara Dew, in Brazil. And did you meet Michael as well, Claudio? Okay, Claudia, we weren't able to hear microphone there. I see. Okay, good. I didn't realize I was transmitting. Anyway, okay. Well, one way you can use video in this kind of chat is just to flash it, just to show that you have a real person speaking here. So, for example, I'll just stick mine up here. There you go. It looks like it's working, although it doesn't seem to say it is. But anyway, the people in the audience can see that there's a real person here. And having established that presence, then that's often enough. Is you don't actually want to run a lot of video. It just kind of dominates the chat. But it also interferes with bandwidth. But in any event, to get back to our topic, we're half an hour through it, what I'm doing is I'm showing you the in the web tour. Let me turn off this video. It's getting. I think I've done enough. Okay. There we go. Okay. So what I've done is I've established that I actually exist. Okay. So in this part of the syllabus, this is for week two. I guess we're starting on week two now. This is about how you have success in a MOOC. Hi, Michael, how you doing? Okay, good, we can see you. Yeah, you're not orange today. Why aren't you orange today? Okay, you've improved your lighting somewhat, except it's black and white. I'm not sure if that's your broadcast or if that's my setting. I might be able to set it to something else. But in any event, the second thing that we can talk about this coming week is how to succeed in a MOOC. So there's another Dave Cormier's videos are just so right on target. If you play this video, it only lasts a couple of minutes, and it covers these points that I put up in the slideshow here. If you're having trouble seeing the slideshow, it could be that the web tour is on top of it. So if you just grab the blue bar of the web tour and drag it aside, you'll see the slides. So basically, Dave addresses how to succeed in, let's see, Thomas Levesque is trying to get into, join us from Tapton, so I have to type the tiny URL. Okay, I did that. Okay, so he's talking about how to succeed in a MOOC. If you find yourself in one, then there are five things you need to do. First of all, you need to orient yourself to the environment. So it's normal that you don't really know what's going on. All this stuff is, all these berries are there, the berry bush is there, but you don't know really how you got in that jungle. And so you orient yourself to where you are, and then you declare, and that is, I guess you introduce yourself as one thing, and then already in some of our discussions we're seeing people ask, for example, there was a posting today about, interesting what the London Group said about multiliteracies. It looks like it's very social, psychological, but what was the cognitive peg, you know? And so I wrote back, oops, in fact, I just printed off the article to reread it and see if I can address that question. But anyway, basically, that's how you declare. You start, you start staking your position. What we're going to ask participants to do in this session is to start, if you haven't already, or augment your e-portfolios, if you have an existing one, with some documentation of what you learned in the course, and then point us to it. So that's basically what we're hoping to get from the participants here. So the third way that you start trying to figure out what you're going to learn is you start networking with people. Networking is what you're doing now. We just met Michael, we met Claudio, and we learned that a few of us have met face-to-face. And so you start forming your network, what we sometimes call the personal learning network. Now, what that is, that the network is the important aspect of an online course. The network is where lifelong learning occurs. So if I go back to the last slide, what is a MOOC? The last point is lifelong learning. So lifelong learning occurs when you have a network. So a MOOC can be a part of your network. It introduces you to a network of people. And the people in the MOOC, once they start forming a network, they might cluster. So in other words, what happens is, and you can see this a lot better in the graphics in Dave's videos. If you play those, you can see them. The videos are very short, only a couple of minutes. They're very, they describe very well how certain people in the MOOC might start interacting with each other. So the focus is not on the teacher. The focus is on the people in the network or in the online environment, in the learning environment. So these massive online open courses might have thousands of people in them, and obviously the teacher can't attend each one. On a scaled back version, maybe you could call this a minuscule open online course. In a minuscule open online course, such as the one we have right now, we can kind of deal with people individually, but really not, because there's still, you know, quite a lot of people in the course. It's very hard for one moderator, even three or four, to answer all the questions of all the people. So basically, people answer each other. So once you've found people that share your interests, that's how you cluster. And then you can focus on what you want from the course. So once you've found once you've oriented in the environment, you've declared that you're part of the course, you've sort of staked out your position, you've met other people in the network, and you start to find the people who are share your thinking, then you can possibly interact with them to develop that focus. And that focus is what we might translate into an e-portfolio. We're going to be looking at e-portfolio as a pedagogical tool. So that comes up in the second, third week, this week and next. We'll start looking at some of the literature around e-portfolios and seeing some models. This last time I gave this course, I gave it kind of for credit. Some people were taking the course into TESOL principles and practices of online teaching, and so I have to say whether the people passed the course or not. So I told them, well, I want you to decide what it is you want from the course. Write that down. Show the steps that you're going through to reach your goals, and then document it somewhere. Put it online. And we have some examples in our syllabus of the people who did that last time around. So any questions or comments on what we're discussing so far? What I'm discussing? I don't want to be just a unit discussor. I'm not sure that's a discussion. So please comment if you wish.
Hello. Hello, can you hear me? Well, I just wanted, I'm sorry, this is Natalia again. I was on and off because of the problems with my connection. I just wanted to comment on Vance's last question and comment about what you learn from this and how you interact with people. And I think this is one of the most important things about it, that you can actually do this in cooperation with other people and share your opinions. I was going to say something else, but I'm sorry, I just kind of lost the track of what I was going to say. Maybe I will just listen to other people for a moment, and then if I remember what I was first going to say, I will do this. I'm sorry, because I was kind of confused about today's setting for some reason. I mean, yeah. And then I had an overnight flight from Moscow to Novosibirsk, which made me stay awake for 12 hours or so. So I'm sorry. I will try to be more focused in the next, the next time and all over the next few weeks. Okay, let me just send you this. Okay, sorry.
Okay, well, thank you. Hope you think of what it was you were going to say. And if you do, just raise your hand or something. We'll see your hand is raised now. Okay, I just took it down. All right. Well, I wonder if anybody, you know, one thing when I'm when we're doing the EVO sessions or we're doing the principles and practices of online teaching, one thing that I can sort of talk about when I'm trying to describe my kind of course is it's not like the other courses. And I'm often told this, and people often tell me that the courses are confusing, but then if they start to figure it out, they feel that they learn quite a lot. They feel that they have learned quite a lot, at least that's what they tell me. The ones who see the point and find it interesting. So I kind of like this approach because I think that there are plenty of courses, but you know, I can often couch things into a language learning perspective. Let's say I'm a language teacher. Actually, I teach computing right now, but I've taught languages for 20 years. Hi, Elizabeth. How are you? Do you want to talk to us as well? Let me release the mic just in case.
Okay. Just to say that I find it much easier to learn about all of the tools than to use them. So what I'm hoping to get out of this multiliteracy is to actually put something, you know, the e-portfolio, there's something online myself. I think, well, I could go on about it, but I think that's enough. I'll go now.
Okay. Let's see if I can, there we go. Oh, here we are. Oh, I don't know, I was trying to, there we are, transmitting, yes, okay, here I am. All right, well, what this course is not, is it's not a, you know, it's not something that's linear, and it's not guided. It's not guided. And I was talking about language learning. It's kind of like if you want to teach a language, or if you think you can teach a language. I don't think it's possible for anybody to teach a language. I mean, you can make it easier for certain students to learn the language, but one way people try to make it easy is they try to reduce noise, you know, so they'll filter certain parts of the language, and actually that's very effective with beginners because beginners actually get very distracted by noise and they can't, you know, you can't just immerse somebody. Well, you can, I suppose. I mean, people do get immersed in languages and cultures, but that's one way to learn it as well. You can go to a country where the language is spoken and you can try to learn it there. And of course, as we know, if you're motivated to do that, then you will. As with language learning, or you know, technology is kind of like that. If you can kind of try to guide people through it, and a lot of people do that, and they construct courses in that way, and teachers instinctively fall into that paradigm where you try to show people how to do it step by step. And well, yeah, that works. That's good, actually. Some people like that. But if you come to the real world, you find that the real world is actually, especially the real world of the internet, artifacts and content are online everywhere. And how do you get it? How do you filter it? You know, it's all coming at you. So, you know, trying to learn how to deal with the reality that you find there is more like going to the country and trying to speak the language. It's good if you have a little background in the language before you go there. So, and of course, you never know when a person goes to a country how much language training they've already had. You don't know when a person takes an online course how much technology training they've already had. So, but if you're looking for language courses, you're going to find lots of language courses where people are going to sort of try to direct your learning. And if you've got a certain level of expertise or you're approaching expertise, you don't necessarily want that. So this course, what I try to do in our courses is to offer an environment where people can teach each other so that people who feel maybe a little bit patronized by other courses might come here, or they could take, becoming a webhead on the one hand where it's more guided, and they could take this course where it's kind of the real world, so you've got both going on at the same time. So anyway, I don't know if I'm making myself clear. Why don't you tell me? Yeah, I think Claudio is asking if he needs a headset. Well, you need a microphone, but the audio here is deliberately one way so that we don't have interference from feedback. Those are issues you get when the audio is two-way. Someone is speaking, and the speakers are on, and it feeds back into the microphone. So that doesn't happen here. So you can go ahead and talk without a headset if you want.
Pant, I just wanted to say that I think you're making sense, but I think the crucial difference or the important point that people need to take on board is that your approach, I haven't done this course, by the way, but obviously I've known Vance for a long time and I have a fair idea how Vance works, and you really do need to find your own way within the course from what Vance is saying, and that mirrors what it's like on the internet, that you need to kind of carve out your own space and find your own people. Some people call it a tribe. Now, Elizabeth is going, but, so I might stop for a minute and hear what Elizabeth means when she's saying, but.
No, I'm sorry, was the message above said, but, is this Claudio? It sounds a bit Aussie. And in actual fact, I realized that, of course, we know who's speaking by looking at the list of participants, which is possible when there's not too many participants. So, sorry, it was an uncalled for interruption.
Well, you've got me laughing here, Elizabeth. That's quite funny. But yes, you can see who's speaking by looking at the microphones next to our names at the top left there, and you can see at the moment my name has a microphone with a little yellow light around it, so I'm the person who is talking. But I think I really said what the main point of what I wanted was that it's a bit of a conundrum in this world of multi-literacies and Web 2, is that it's actually very difficult to teach, and I'd argue it's almost impossible and maybe even wrong to try and teach people how to do this stuff, how to be a part of this new culture, because the only way you're ever going to experience what it's like to be part of this new culture is to do it yourself. You just have to do it yourself. So it can't be taught. I'll stop there.
Well, there's another analogy with language learning right there. And people are often, you know, in the position of having to teach languages to people who just want to be taught, and they don't really have a real motivation from learning the language. And you meet people like that in this field quite a lot. They sort of think that they really ought to get with it with technology, but they don't really make the effort. And which you can tell, because it's all you have to do to get trained in technology is to train yourself. And it's the berries are there on the bush, you know. So you're passing by the berry bushes all the time and not expecting the conduit to be activated. It's not going to happen. But or maybe you can enroll in a certain kind of course, or you can take the EBO sessions and, you know, have it channeled to you. Eventually, though, you get the idea that really to get out and learn that language, you're going to have to interact with people, just as Michael said, because it's ineffable. I like that word, ineffable. It means that it's something you have to do. You can't really explain it. Ineffable is where you can't explain something, but once you you know it, then you have it. And actually, if I can just continue one little bit here, Elizabeth, on the last topic and the last part, the week three part of the syllabus next week, the connectivist part of the course that we're doing right now is where knowledge comes from, how knowledge is created. And Dave Cormier addresses that in the third video that he's put up. It's a very short one, very interesting. And I tried to encapsulate the points on the third slide here, the last slide that I'm going to show. And the URLs for his video are there and at the week three syllabus, which it should be on the web tour right now. So If you scroll down there, you can see a picture of Dave, and he's talking about knowledge in a MOOC. And basically, a MOOC, which I could, it's a massive open online course, but we can also call it a minuscule open online course. It's the one we have right here. And it's that the berries in the bush, the things that you find in the syllabus, are not all the knowledge that there is on the topic. So if someone gives you a course and says, this is everything you need to know, that person is probably swindling you in some way. That the berries on the bush are a catalyst for knowledge. So for example, a really good illustrative video is the Weinberg-Keene debates. We have that in the syllabus. If you listen to Andrew Weinberger talk about, oh, did I get his first name right? Anyway, if you listen to Weinberger talk about, you know, how tagging works and metadata attached to, how we find things through tagging, through folksonomies, except instead of through taxonomies, that opens lots of doors, because tagging is the essential element, I think, in the internet, in how we organize the knowledge on the internet. Tagging is one of them. And he says in his video, Dave does, that basically this kind of course creates themes. And so the themes are really more important than the content you might find in the course. And the third point is especially important, that is that the participants are where the knowledge is. If you consider knowledge structures that run through, if you consider going, say, from individuals to groups to communities and networks, you can see, for example, that an individual might join a group, but a group could be just a bunch of people standing on a corner. But a group can find something in common and start working together, in which case they might be more like a community. And we also have what we call communities of practice, which are where the community gets together over a domain and finds a space to interact in. They're trying to improve their knowledge of something that they're impassioned about. And so Etienne Wenger wrote a lot about exactly what a community of practice is. But the communities of practice also overlap with one another. The people in those communities overlap so that someone in one community might know someone in another. And so now a network is established, because the person who knows the person in the second network, the person in the second network also knows X, Y, and Z. So through B, the person in the second network, person A also has access to the knowledge in X, Y, and Z. So what you have to do, according to Siemens, is he says that the pipe is more important than the content. What that means is that your access to knowledge is more important than the knowledge itself. When you need to know something, you Google it, or you get into you ask your PLN, or you go on Twitter, or you just follow Twitter, and something pops in that you need to know. So this is the knowledge that you have, basically, is the knowledge is as good as your network. And a minuscule open online course or a massive open online course helps you develop your network. And then what Dave calls field, the course creates a focus for discussion. So you get knowledge from that discussion, not necessarily by, and traditionally, what someone has laid out in advance for you. So I don't know, what do you think about that? Does that make sense?
If I can come in now, although it was when we were talking about learning this digital knowledge being the same as learning the language, I think that many of us are in the situation where we have colleagues who think we are wasting our time, and we often feel impatient that they don't want to learn. And it's very difficult to find a point of equilibrium between wanting other people to use it or saying, right, they don't want to know, it's okay, I'll stay with the people who are interested and who are online. I don't know if that's been clear. But the other thought which came up too is that when the students are learning in the class English, we do have a knowledge of English. When someone is interested in a new tool, we often don't have that sufficient knowledge to teach. Does that make sense?
Well, you said if you or someone is learning a new tool, you don't have the knowledge sufficient to teach it. Yes, well, that's right. Well, what Michael says, get them to teach you about it, that's possible. Or you go to your network and learn, or model. Model going to your network. Show your students how you go out into your network and learn about this tool. And then make it a collective thing. Upturn the idea that there's a teacher and a student. The teacher has all the knowledge. You know, be a learner with your students. I don't know, Michael, maybe you have something to add? Or Elizabeth, elaborate further on that?
Yes, I was thinking of my colleagues, my teacher colleagues. Teacher colleagues who are not getting involved in the web tools available. Not the students. I mean, there's no problem with the students. Yes, we can teach each other. I'm absolutely talking about other teachers getting online and discovering what is available. They say to me, "Oh, you know that," as if it's really strange. I'm sorry, I can't express it any more than that.
Now, there's an interesting podcast from Michael's part of the world called EdTech Crew. And sometimes they interview, I'm sure if you look up EdTech Crew online, you can find this podcast. Daryl and the EdTech guy, who's the other guy? I don't know, I can't remember. Anyway, when they interview people on their show, they always ask this question. They always ask the person they interview, how do you keep up? How do you keep on top of your game, you know? And so people will, you know, is it RSS feeds? You follow RSS feeds, or do you you follow Twitter? And, you know, just to listen to what some people say about what they do, you know, how do they keep up? For me, I probably listen to a lot of podcasts, like the EdTech Crew, and I happen on Michael's podcast every now and then. Alexander Hayes is always surprised that I know anything about what he's doing, but I listen to his conferences, and I just listen to stuff that comes to me through the World Bridges channel or some of the conferences that are going on. For example, a K-12 online conference that is just a rich font of incredible information about technology. If you listen to all those podcasts, you'll learn quite a lot. And last time I checked, they hadn't put them up for this year, but it might be there now. So that's a really good one, K-12 online conference, if you can Google that. But it's hard, though. I teach teachers as well. I find that to be the stumbling block in the whole thing, is getting teachers off the mark. You know, some teachers are enthusiastic, but where I work, certainly few of them are. But it's coming gradually. It's painstakingly slow. One thing I've just got some of my teachers doing is Google Docs. I'm starting to get across the idea that it's ridiculous sitting around all these attachments, and I'm not sure how it happened, but maybe it's just the way the world is working and people are starting to trust it more, or maybe they see by example how it's working with students, because I'm using Google Docs with students. There's a history there. You put the students in teams and collaboration, and you discover that some of the you can see clearly who's collaborating, who isn't. I'm working with English teachers as a computing teacher, and discovering that Google Docs is the common tool we have to use with the English teachers. And so one of my co-teachers in computing is seen some of the affordances, and she's started to suggest that we create Google Docs for this, that, and the other, so it's not just me now, it's some, me and somebody else, and so, you know, it's starting to come along. It comes slowly, but I think the thing you need to do is be a good model. If you listen to some of Terry Friedman's, one of his K-12 online conferences presentations a few years ago was about being a successful change agent. So if you manage to find that one, that's Terry Friedman, the guy from the UK, not Thomas Friedman, the guy who writes about Flat World, Terry Friedman. And so some of his ideas, for example, were you don't want to pontificate, you want to assume that the other person is trying to do a good job. You need to think through your strategy, not just present the idea, but what if it's accepted? What then? Make sure you've thought through all those steps. There are several really good advice for people trying to be change agents. You can look up change agency online, and you can find more about that. But I think if you look at Stephen Downs, what he says, what I always repeat, he says a teacher is someone who models and demonstrates. A student is someone who reflects and practices. So if you, I see that as being percolative, so that teachers are actually master learners, as David Warlick likes to say, and a master learner is someone who is a teacher because he knows, he or she knows more about teaching or learning. She knows more about learning than the people she is working with. So as a master learner, you know how to reflect and practice. And as a teacher, you know how to model and demonstrate. So you're always doing those things over and over again. So a teacher does all of those things. Enough from me. Yeah, Claudio, we can see you talking, and sorry we can't hear you. Maybe at a future session. I say a future session because I'm going to have to go. I'm going to Austria tonight. I don't know if you know Graham Davies, but he's one of my mentors. When I was starting out a PhD, I got kind of bored with it. But anyway, he was my point person on my PhD. He's been a long-time mentor, and he's skiing in San Johann in Austria right now, and I've got a two-week holiday, and my son needs a little boost, and so the two of us are going to go to Austria and spend the first few days with Graham. So we're flying tonight, and I got to get home and get packed, so I can't stay much longer, and Michael needs to get to bed. It's late for him, and Claudio needs to get his microphone fixed, and Elizabeth needs to meet with her family who's just turned up. And Tom, good to see you here. I've just noticed you're here in the chat. So hope you've enjoyed this. This will all be recorded. I like to give the date. This is the 16th of January, 2011. We're learning together. We're a bunch of webheads and people in the Multiliteracies EVO group. And we're talking right now with Carol Pena in Dominican Republic, and Claudio in Brazil, and Maisie in Israel, and Michael in Australia, and Tom in Illinois, and this is Vance Stevens in Abu Dhabi, and we're going to open it up for final comments, and then we're going to have to shut it down, because I just got to go. And what happens is the recording gets made automatically once everybody leaves the chat. So I'll keep the recording going until it gets really quiet. But anyway, thanks very much, everybody, for coming out. And I hope this has been is something that lets you into my head. As Michael sees, he sees how I work. But as you see, I also work kind of like Dave Cormier does. And anyhow, well, I hope you've enjoyed the session. And any final comments before we go? Okay, and Claudio, what he wants to say, what he's been trying to say, is that Everything is related to intrinsic motivation. If you're not motivated enough, then learning will never take place, no matter if you're a teacher or a student. And so anyway, that's what he's put in the text chat. So Claudia, it looks like it's just you and me, and I wish you could say goodnight and record that what you just said on the chat yourself. But I think we're going to have to say goodbye. It was nice to see you in Brazil, and hope we meet again. Goodbye. Okay. So long.